When the Berlin Wall fell a decade ago and communism collapsed, it wasn't just Eastern Europeans who felt liberated. Some young Americans, too, saw it as an opportunity for reinvention. In the early 1990s, cities like Moscow, Budapest, and Prague were inundated by eager Americans looking for something, whether it was adventure, meaning, or just a quick buck. That moment is captured in the new book Prague, written by Arthur Phillips.
I just want to ask you the obvious first question. I'm sure you get asked this by every single person who looks at your book, and that is...
I'm ready.
Ready? Are you ready
for
this?
I'm ready for it.
Really? Your novel is called Prague, but it's not set in Prague. It's set in Budapest. And why did you decide to call it Prague?
It's not named for the city Prague. It's named for the desire to be somewhere else. In the book, that's a recurring theme, the desire or the suspicion that if you were somewhere else or someone else or lived at some other time or had some other job, that maybe you'd feel more authentic or real or something. And for some people in Budapest at around 90 and 91, Prague, you know, the Prague Post was the English language newspaper in Prague, and it started the idea that Prague in the 90s was a reincarnation of Paris in the 20s. And that idea got picked up, and it, you know, turned up in the New York Times, and it got some airtime, and so there was a certain panache about Prague. And that, you know, people in Budapest heard that, and expats living there for their various reasons might have felt that they had just missed by a couple hundred miles the place to be.
Was there a similar feeling in Budapest that it should be the Paris of the 20s?
Well, in some circles that did come up, yeah. I mean, the idea was sort of unavoidable. A lot of people went to Eastern Europe. People went for all kinds of reasons, but a lot of people did go with artistic aspirations. They were young Americans trying to make art in a cheap European capital in a post-war atmosphere. The parallels, although not profound, were sort of, you know, inescapable.
Tell us more about Mark, the character studying nostalgia. He's in the beginning obsessed with studying nostalgia, which is funny in and of itself, but he gives it up toward the end of the book. Why is that?
I came up with this idea of someone who is so overwhelmed by nostalgia wherever they go, particularly where they go places where they themselves don't have a lot of personal history. Obviously, he has no relationship to Hungary, and yet he finds he's moved to tears by the buildings and the scenery and the act of, you know, merely taking a form of public transportation that he doesn't have in Canada. And I thought, wouldn't it be funny if someone had really spent their entire academic career trying to sort of soothe their own feelings of personal or misplaced cultural nostalgia? And then I was about halfway through the book when a book came out, and it was essentially a history of nostalgia.
Really?
Yeah, it came out. I was about halfway through the book, and I felt just deflated that someone real had turned up out of nowhere. But I plowed on. Mark Payton suffers from nostalgia, and he's trying to cure it by this research work that he does. And at the end, he finds himself not only not cured, but getting worse and worse and worse the more he thinks about these issues. And I don't want to give away too much of the plot here, but finds that the only place where he feels safe is a place where there is absolutely no history whatsoever.
And he becomes obsessed with CNN.
He does become obsessed with CNN, which he thinks represents the present. And then CNN lets him down because he realizes it's just, you know, old newsreels that just don't happen to be old yet.
And he, along with all your other characters, seem lost, that they're searching for something that they may or may not find, with the notable exception of Charles Gábor, the Hungarian-American who's the ruthless capitalist. Is that what you found in Budapest, a collection of lost souls?
No, I found plenty of lost souls, and I had my own time of being mildly lost here and there. I think part of that's a function of being in your 20s. I know I found some people who were very focused, you know, people who were starting businesses, which are thriving to this day, people who met and fell in love with Hungarians and Czechs and have stayed on essentially as immigrants. But yeah, there were plenty of people who were also there as artists or posing as artists or not quite sure themselves which it was they were doing, people who were there to make a quick buck without giving a whole lot of thought to what that might mean for the people off of whom they were making that quick buck.
And the idea of American investment does not come off favorably in your book.
Oh, I would disagree. I would say that the idea of American investment is equivocally presented, and you could draw from it, from the story in the book, whatever you might think about American investment. I wouldn't say I was trying to condemn it, and I wouldn't say that I did. I tried to make it as open-ended as possible, actually, with a presentation of the sort of thing that might be lost when Western money comes in, as well as the sort of thing that might be gained.
Mm-hmm.
I think Western investment in a lot of these places is, especially in Eastern Europe, especially in new democracies and new capitalist societies, is crucial. On the other hand, I am somebody who finds change of all sorts kind of sad, and yet businesses grow and businesses die, and I think it's a balancing act, you know, the balance between economic development and historical preservation. And the story in the book is one one example of it.
Well, you capture an interesting dichotomy because you have the Americans in a place like Budapest who feel superior in terms of their business know-how, and they make fun of, you know, every meal is some paprika chicken congealed mess. But at the same time, they're really in awe of something that they don't have, and that is the history and the beauty and the true suffering. And I think there's a passage in your book where the main character, John Price, talks about how great it would be to suffer all this oppression, but yet not actually suffer it.
There was a kind of an odd mutual envy. You know, the Hungarians did look at the Americans and say, wow, you guys have been, you're free and you're rich. And that must be great. We'd like to be free and rich too. And the Americans said, yeah, but you know what you're made of. You know, you were overrun, you were oppressed, and you either collaborated or you resisted or you did something in between, and you know exactly what you can take. And the Hungarian said, yeah, that's fascinating. You know, can you invest some more now, please? So there was, you know, it was an interesting mutual envy that you saw from time to time.
But there's also a mutual dislike and a mutual distrust.
There is, and it grows, I think, you know, as the book proceeds. And I think it also, when I first went to Budapest in 1990, I really feel very fortunate. I felt like I was welcome there, and I felt like I was interesting to Hungarians. And I don't think that that could still be the case today. And I don't know that that's a tragedy. I think it's, you know, realistic. There are Americans of all types. But I think we were, for a while, welcomed with a sort of open-hearted enthusiasm that it seemed like a great welcome. Over the course of time, it changes, of course. And in the book as well, there becomes a sort of mutual dislike and suspicion, at least on the part of some of the characters, of the Hungarians, who have a reputation, their sort of international reputation, is kind of a slippery people, or people who have know their way around the rules when necessary, which is possibly very necessary based on their history. And that offends some of the Americans, and the Hungarians in turn are offended by the Americans' sort of naivete about history and naivete about how the world works, and about their arrogance that they know how businesses and democracy and everything else is supposed to function.
Have you been back to Hungary since you wrote the novel?
No, I haven't been back to Hungary in 10 years.
And do you feel nostalgic for that period, the early 90s?
Well, now you've come to the reason why I wrote the book, actually. I had been back in the States for about 5 years, and I felt so overwhelmingly nostalgic for that time and place that I really was kind of a drag to be around. And my wife and others would ask me to stop talking about Hungary. And so I thought, well, maybe I could write about this time, and then I can maybe work through some of my nostalgic issues. So it worked a little bit in that I feel somewhat less nostalgic for it now than I did when I started. But I do have very warm feelings, and so almost oppressively warm feelings for the years that I spent in Budapest.
Arthur Phillips, thank you very much.
Thank you, Madeline.
Arthur Phillips is the author of Prague. He copes with his nostalgia while living in the actual Paris with his wife and son.